This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
How wild did it get?
Oh, it got pretty intense. And I was in the studio the whole night, pretty much, did the halftime show, the post-game show. And so I didn't get to see any of the craziness. We didn't get out of there until like 2:30 a.m.
Wow.
But on the way home, streets were still packed. There's cops with the megaphone. Get off the street! The city is now closed! You know, they're trying to get everybody out there. The people are still partying and stuff, but... I missed the most of it, but still leaving the studio at 2:30 in the morning, the guys were still out and celebrating, so it was pretty crazy.
So you're doing post-game for WIP. You are there till 2:30 in the morning. Just curious, when you did the post-game show, Clay, initially, two questions. Number one, what was the level of surprise at how dominant the Eagles were against the Chiefs? And secondly, did you really wear your number 82 jersey for the entire show?
No, I didn't wear the jersey. I thought about it. I'm like, no, I'm not going to go in there and wear the jersey. But I thought they would win, but I don't think anybody expected what we saw. Obviously, you got the 25 pressures, the 11 quarterback hits, 6 sacks, 3 takeaways. And I thought that it was going to be closer, but that kind of domination when you only send 4 is tough for any quarterback. If you can get pressure with 4, obviously you're not sending anybody, so now you got everybody still in coverage. And I went back to do a little research, and I was studying the game before for Vic Fangio. He played against Patrick Mahomes last year in the playoffs with the Miami Dolphins, and he sent 18-0 blitzes that game last season against the Dolphins. I'm thinking, okay, maybe Fangio's going to light him up here. And the guy doesn't blitz at all. And his defensive line just goes crazy. And I've never seen Patrick Mahomes look like a tap dancer before. But it was just incredible how he was able to get him off his rhythm.
Yeah, I mean, he played poorly. I don't know why everyone seemed afraid to say it, but he did not. Like, there was something wrong with him. He was not accurate at the beginning of the game. He missed some throws. I know he was under siege the whole game, but you know, we always talk about toughness at the quarterback position, and toughness could be defined as taking a sack and making a play. He took 2 sacks, then threw a pick 6. I mean, that you just don't see that happen with him. And as I said, he was really rattled.
Oh man, I've never seen Patrick Mahomes like that. You're talking 6 of 14 for 33 yards in the first half and 2 interceptions, 1 first down. The Eagles had more points in the first half than the Chiefs had net yards. It was his lowest QBR of his entire career. I'm not just talking about his lowest QBR in the playoffs and the Super Bowl, his entire career. So what they're able to do to that guy, I mean, you got to take your hat off to Vic Fangio. The game plan that he came up with, it might have been simple. You look at it, he ran zone on all but two snaps. So he's just playing zone coverage, and particularly cover four, quarters coverage, 60% of the time, and he just let his guys go out there and play fast. It might be simple, but it was effective.
Clay, did you consider Jalen Hurts a top 10 quarterback before this game? And did this outcome maybe, in your mind, help him get into that group? Because I always wonder if a guy is appreciated more in that market than he is outside of it, and maybe Jalen Hurts is an example of that.
I think he's a guy that's just unfairly targeted and almost hated on. Obviously, he's not the most boisterous guy. He's not loud and outspoken, but he is just a true professional, a winner, and a guy that literally cares about nothing else but winning football games. To answer the question, I would say he was around 10. He didn't have to do much this year. Like I said, the Eagles had more rushing yards this season than passing yards, the only team in the NFL. So you can't say that, Saquon Barkley was the reason that Hurts, you could have made that argument before Sunday. Saquon averaged 2.3 yards per carry on 20 attempts. Jalen Hurts comes back and has his third highest completion percentage of the season at 77%, passes for 221, two touchdowns, and also runs for 72 yards, which is a Super Bowl record. That's the first player to throw for 200 yards and rush for 50 in a Super Bowl. This guy can do it in so many different ways. You have to put him into the top five category now. You've seen his stats throughout the last two Super Bowls that he played in. He could have been a Super Bowl. He could have been Super Bowl MVP in a losing effort. That's how good he was last time he played.
Top five?
Yeah, that's pretty
top
good.
Five?
Well, I mean,
I'm top five. How can you not?
I think that it's kind of like the whole the reason that you had the Buffalo quarterback Josh Allen win MVP was because people looked at Lamar's season, great as it was, and they said, well, he got help. They added a running back, and his responsibility changed, and Josh Allen lost the best receiver he's ever had, and he had a great year. So I think you could make that kind of an argument with Jalen that he got a running back with him. They got they hired Vic Fangio, and their defense came to life. And, not that he was a passenger in any way. He's a great player. But his role became easier somehow this year, and that's what you witnessed, especially in the Super Bowl when they had to be so worried about Barkley.
Yeah, he did. His role did become easier, and obviously they're running the football. But you got to realize what this guy does. And to relate to the Bears, I see a little bit of Caleb Williams, not a ton, and I think he's a mix between Mahomes and Hurts. But Jalen Hurts, they take away Saquon Barkley. Not a lot of quarterbacks are going to be able to use that to rush for 72 yards in the Super Bowl. Yeah, you're taking away Saquon, but now you're giving up this guy 72 yards. So the running game was still there because of Jalen Hurts.
Right.
And you look at Hurts in the second half, 6-7, 100 yards, a TD, 158 rating, a perfect rating, and three carries for 50 yards. When it matters most, that's when Jalen Hurts shows up.
It's a convincing argument, Clay. I have to admit that. So when you're out there at 2:30 in the morning and you're seeing the Eagles fans climbing poles and doing whatever they do to celebrate, what are they saying and thinking about Nick Sirianni now? The guy that would yell at them early in the season has come a long way since then. And let's face it, due respect, he's got a Super Bowl ring and he's only been there 4 years.
He's got a Super Bowl ring. He's only been there 4 years. He's been in the playoffs every year that he's been there. He's got a top five winning percentage in NFL history. And obviously, now he's got the Super Bowl ring. So it's funny, they start 2-2, and people are calling for Sirianni's head because last year, yes, they won 11 games. They made the playoffs, but they lost six of their last seven, and they didn't know what to do. You know, there was no way they could figure this thing out. They end up getting bounced off the playoff by the Bucks. But he comes back, new D coordinator, new offensive coordinator, makes it all the way back to the Super Bowl. Now you think about it, though, he had two different offensive and defensive coordinators in two different Super Bowls. Who's the one consistent guy? Nick Sirianni. So you can't say, okay, what's this guy do? And that's what a lot of people say because he doesn't call plays, right? But he's got two different offensive and defensive coordinators. So he's the only consistent guy there. He's the guy that motivates his players. If you talk to any of those guys, I'm still friends with Brandon Graham. When I was out there for the divisional round, I was hanging out with Jason Kelce. And Nick is a guy that they love. They play for him no matter what they might look like in the national media. He is intelligent, knows what he's doing.
You know, I'm not going to argue with you, but like all of those assistants became head coaches, including Kellen, but except for Vic, who is, in the words of Sirianni, the most underrated defensive coordinator in league history, probably the best defensive coordinator in league history, he said on Monday. So I'm just saying he's been surrounded by great coaches, too. I wonder who's going to last longer in their current head coaching job. Is it Nick Sirianni or Andy Reid at the soon-to-be 67?
I love Coach Reid, but, I mean, he's getting up there, and you saw his offense just – I'm not saying it's getting figured out, but all year he wasn't able to move the ball, and, yeah, maybe that's because he didn't have a lot of the weapons, and the offensive line was a little bit shaky. But that's an old-school offense. I love the offense, but I feel like you need a bit a younger feel there. And I don't know if Coach Reid is going to have that longevity. And just an age thing. Nick Sirianni,
right.
You want another stat. He's the youngest coach. He's the only coach in their first 4 years of coaching to – he has the best winning percentage, the most wins of any coach in their first four seasons in NFL history. Look at that. How can you bet against that? This guy's nobody else in NFL history has more wins in their first four seasons. And I know it was ugly at the end of last year, but you got to say this guy's going to continue to get better. Obviously, they're going to lose Kellen Moore, but he's replaced coordinators before, so I trust that Sirianni is going to be a guy that can last.
Talking with Clay Harbor from the Chicago Sports Network, who was on the call WIP postgame show in Philadelphia when the Eagles won the Super Bowl. So Clay, you had an interesting tweet yesterday in regard to, we all here in Chicago, as you know, have talked about the Bears targeting Trey Smith in free agency. Well, now maybe they want to keep him, and if they do, you offered a pretty good alternative in Mekhi Becton, who is the Eagles guard as well. What's the likelihood that he is going to hit the market before the Eagles lock him up, and how would you compare the two guys at that guard position?
Man, Trey Smith. I was high on him during the regular season, but you look at him in the playoffs, the division round, he gave up five pressures, didn't have a good game. The conference championship did not have a good game. And then obviously the Super Bowl gave up a sack, a couple of hurries and three pressures. He just did not play well in the playoffs, and he was just getting out physical. And that's not what I want to see. He's a big, he's an athletic guy, and I think he could fit Ben Johnson's system. When I look at Mekhi Becton, this guy is 6'6", 350 pounds, and he can move. Obviously, he's got this connotation because he was a bust in New York. But when they moved him into guard, which changes a lot of things.
Yeah.
The guy's a top-level guard. I don't think it's – I think it's tit for tat with him and Trey Smith. I think Trey Smith is going to garner all the attention when you can get Becton a little bit under the radar, because the Eagles do got some players they got to bring back. Zach Bond made $1.5 million this year. David, you make more than that on the score. You know, I mean, they have to pay him. He could have been a defensive player of the year. So there's some pieces they got to get back. I don't know if they're able to bring Becton back, Bond back, Josh Sweat back, Milton Williams, who to me is one of the most underrated interior defenders in the league. The guy's great against the run and pass. He would be a guy I'd be interested in. So they got a lot of pieces to try to fill there, and I think Becton's going to be one of them that they let slip through the hole there, because they got Jeff Stoutland University, and they trust that Stoutland can develop whoever they can. They got Landon Dickerson, a draft pick there, so I think Becton reaches free agency because of Landon Dickerson and Jeff Stoutland. They trust him to develop whoever.
I'm curious, Clay, did I read somewhere, did I hear you say that you once played for Dan Rauscher, that you have a relationship with him. What can you tell us about the new offensive line coach for the Bears?
Yeah, I had a cup of tea, a cup of coffee in New Orleans, right, with the Saints. Yep. You know, I played there for a year. Rauscher, unbelievable dude. He's just really good at teaching technique, and he's a good developer. You look, I was there. We drafted Ryan Ramczyk and Alvin Kamara. Obviously, Kamara was a big name, but Ramczyk, he was a guy, when he first came into OTAs, I said, no way this guy is going to be our starting tackle this year. And obviously, a lot of times, rookies, you know, will develop quickly. But the way Rauscher worked with him and developed Ramczyk, the way he made Terrion Arnold a better player, the way Larry Warford, he turned him into a Pro Bowler when he got there. He was just a mid-level free agent signing. This guy knows how to develop offensive linemen. He's a technician. He's a great teacher. And he's just a guy that enjoys it. Old school coach. He's going to let you hear about it if you're not doing up to your standards. He's going to hold you accountable. But I think it's perfect for the Bears. Exactly the guy they need.
Overall, Clay, when you look at the staff that Ben Johnson has assembled from a ex-player's perspective, what do you like about it, and is there anything that concerns you?
No, I love it, man. I like playing for former players in Philly, and I can't say it's tough for me to talk bad about this guy. I'm not going to talk bad about him, but he's the Chiefs tight end coach right now. His name's Tom Melvin. Me and him didn't click. I mean, he's a guy. He's a nerd. Never played football in his life, and I just couldn't relate to the guy. And you go to Jacksonville. I have a former player there, and then obviously Dan Campbell, former player at tight end. It's just so easy to relate to these guys, and they relate to you because they've been there and they've played the game. They can teach the technique, and it's almost like you're listening a little bit more. And I love that you got a lot of experience, firstly, and then you got a lot of former players that have been in the arena, have had the pads on. They know what it looks like when you're trying to pick up a blitz. They know what it looks like when you're trying to diagnose one high or two high safeties. They know what it looks like when you're bluffing the blitz and they have a fire zone. They can just teach better, and I love how they got so many guys with experience on this roster, experience in coaching, but also experience in playing, because that makes a big difference.
I'm curious, Clay, when you look at that sort of thing, and when we talk about Rauscher and his teaching ability, are there any current Bears offensive linemen? They got like five free agents. They got a couple backup guys. Is there anyone that you think he can work with? Is there anyone you would sign back because of the way that he works with people? Is there any hope for returning any of these guys?
Project.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think Kieran Amagaji, I think he got thrown in a tough spot there starting his first game in Minnesota. And I can tell you guys that place might not have a reputation for being a loud place. It's one of the loudest stadiums I've ever played at. When you're a tackle coming from Yale, you've never used a silent count in your life. So you have to look at the center and head movement before you can move. And then to put him out there with no training camp, with no preseason games, without ever using a snap count. I went to Missouri State. I didn't know what a silent count was. And that's tough when you're on the edge of the line there trying to get a jump, and you throw this guy out and he doesn't even know what a silent count is. So I think he's a guy that has the tools. We saw him last year in the Senior Bowl. He was a guy that had a little bit of buzz about him. That's why he drafted him in the third round.
Yeah.
He's the exact type of guy I think Rauscher can develop. As far as the rest of the guys, you know, Matt Pryor, he's been in the league. He's been under Stout. I don't think he's going to, you know, he's kind of reached his ceiling, but he's a guy I wouldn't mind seeing back.
Bates
is a guy that's been around the league. I don't think there's a lot of developmental projects. Maybe the mini fridge. Maybe he makes the mini fridge into an actual fullback. I don't know. He can develop him into something. Maybe give him a couple more carries.
That's great. Hey, thanks so much, Clay. We really appreciate
it. Good stuff,
man.
Clay.
Great stuff.
Welcome back.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hey, Jared, how are you?
Doing great, fellas. Happy Valentine's Day.
Ah, bless you. Yes, that is the day. Get some chocolates and flowers, for God's sake, whatever you do.
If I was there, I'd give you both a big, huge hug, man. You guys are amazing.
How's your voice, Jared?
It's, Dave, it's getting better, man. I was laughing about that this morning as I just dropped off my daughter at school. I'm like, I'm starting to sound like myself again, man. Worst time ever to lose your voice at Super Bowl. Like, worst time, you know? Like, come on. Hey, with all the talking, and, you know, I looked at the commissioner, and he's like, yeah, bad time to lose your voice. And he goes, for someone that really likes to talk a lot, this is going to be tough for the rest of my career. Like, I know.
Well, you look great on the field in all those different roles. It had to be very exciting to be part of the Super Bowl, even though obviously you couldn't speak, but just to be there and also for what you were doing, giving out the Walter Payton Man of the Year.
Yeah, I was listening to you guys before just about, you know, the kind of the excitement here in Chicago, you know, and just like, you know, people thinking about three-peat and people cheering for the Eagles. I'm telling you, New Orleans, this it was – as the kids would say, it was lit in New Orleans. Like the buzz for the game was unbelievable. And I just said, like, this is my 26th Super Bowl that I've been to. Mm-hmm. And it keeps getting, I don't know how it can keep getting bigger and bigger. The game wasn't what we were expecting, but just the vibe around the city and the fans, it was, I mean, you can kind of tell by Radio Row how things like are, how big it is. And like, I feel like every single year it keeps getting bigger and bigger. But yeah, our family, it's an honor. I can't tell you like how cool it is to see this award keep getting bigger every single year. And Eric Armstead is an amazing, amazing guy. And we're excited to welcome him into the family. Can I tell you a cool story though?
Please.
Cool. This is a real cool story. So the Night of Honors, Steve Gleason was on the stage with Drew Brees, wearing my dad's jersey. And so after the end of honors, we're busy doing other stuff. And so like, we can't always see the people, everybody backstage. And it is kind of cluster in the back. Everybody's back there. Well, we didn't get a chance to see, we're looking for Steve. Everybody was taking pictures with him and we didn't get a chance to go up to him and say thank you, because they were bringing us back to hand Eric Armstead his jersey with the Man of the Year patch on it. And this is the first time that we've done that. So cool moment. They capture it, but we're all upset because we didn't get a chance to see him. Saturday night at the commissioner's ball, we go and we're like, yo, we're at the party, and we get out of our van and Steve Gleason's right there. And he's about to go in, and we're all like sitting there. So Brittany says something to him, and then I say something with a little bit of voice that I had, just like, thank you for repping my dad's jersey, and like we really do, we love you, and all this other stuff. And he so we didn't know, so we were about to like walk away, and the lady goes, no, he's typing right now, and he types. He says I love that man. He was talking about my pops, and I was like, oh my goodness. And then my sister was talking a little bit more, and he wrote us this unbelievable message, and we're listening to it. And he does this thing where you tap foreheads with him and look him in the eye, and he mm-hmm. wants you to do that. And both of us did that with him. And it was just one of those cool moments that I'll always remember from the Super Bowl. And, just everything that he stands for, and man, it was
that's great,
powerful.
Jarrett. Yeah,
yeah, that is
memory.
Great. I gotta tell you, I watched that way too much of that night, and it was almost like a red carpet thing, you know, like the beginning of it. It was like watching the Oscars or something, waiting for the big show to begin. It was really so much more improved than I remember it years ago.
Molly, I'll tell you what though. The potency of whatever Snoop had in his trailer was definitely active backstage. Holy cow. Like, I mean, like, soon as you got backstage, like, you walk by, and where his trailer was, it had to be accessible for him to get in and out of costume changes to get to the stage. But holy cow. Like, I don't know how he did. I don't know how he functioned and did the show. You know.
Well, you saw the show. I'm not sure. I'm not sure. A lot of people would call that functioning necessarily, Jared. He's been better, right?
Yeah. It was. Yeah. I mean, we were backstage most of the show, so I didn't really get a chance to. A lot of people at home didn't really enjoy it that much. I guess I was seeing just on social, but when he came out with the Pittsburgh jersey and uniform on, he walked by me and I was videotaping him. I didn't know if I was supposed to. And then he like kind of gave me, he dapped me up, but I didn't get it on video, but I got him walking by me and he just started laughing. But yeah, huge. Like, I know Snoop's a little controversial, but he's a football guy. That's what, in this climate that we live in, I should say. But big, huge football guy. And funny story was, when my sister was at Fox, she was pregnant with her first, and he was on the show, and he put his hand on her belly and said, it's going to be a boy. Well, almost 9 years later, she sees him again, and she wanted just to tell him, and he remembered the story, and he wanted to know, was it a boy or a girl? And he was like, she goes, I got two girls. But he told the story, remembered the story, and just a lot of props to my pops, man. Try to tell his son, he's like, I try to teach my son the hard work and the values of what your dad was all about all the time, like how he worked, and trying to teach the people around me how he worked. So it's man, it's the spirit, man, during those weeks of my pops is just kind of crazy.
Emotional week because you leave the Super Bowl, you come back and pay your respects to Virginia McCaskey. And I'm sure that, Jarrett, you saw some people in a part of the Bears family. It's a different experience for you. Your connection to the McCaskeys is much more unique than ours. And so I wonder how you would reflect on what this week you went through in terms of seeing people who were here also for whether her wake or the funeral, and just your experience going through that.
Oh, I didn't get a chance. My mom went to the funeral, and we both went to the wake. And it's just, David, we are a family. And when it comes to the Bears and what Virginia meant to my family and my mom, it's kind of bizarre. We were just talking about this morning. My mom was going through social media, and she was just looking at a lot of clips that people have been sending her just about Virginia and how she, especially when my dad passed, and how hard it was for her to talk about him. And that, she said after Brian Piccolo, the family decided they weren't going to get close to any other player again, but it was just hard when my dad came around. And I think their relationship was just so strong. And the way that Virginia made my mom feel when she came to, this city, and when she was in the 70s, like this is a girl from New Orleans. She didn't really know anything about being up in the Midwest. And Virginia always made her feel comfortable and made her feel like she belonged. And I just, it's a big part. My mom has always talked about that, but it's really come back to the forefront just with her passing. And I just think that what she means, and for me, she was like a grandma to me. So every time that I see her, it was always a smile and a hug. Always asked how I was doing. When my kids were born, she would ask how the kids were doing. I've told this before on this airwaves. She would always send them Christmas gifts and different stuff throughout the year. I mean, it was just it was a totally different vibe. And so for me, it was tough when we walked through that line to see the family. It was hard not to hold back tears because of how amazing she was. And she lived an amazing life. I mean, 102, she's not only lived an amazing life, she got a chance to be able to see a lot of football, a lot of Bears football. And to me, that's what made her so special, is that she was, everything about her was top notch. And so she will be missed. And the McCaskey family definitely knows that we're always here with them, and to be able to help keep her legacy and her spirit alive, because they do the same for us with my father. So it'll be a joint effort from now on moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of tributes to her and the work that she did in her life, and it was a star-studded event. I mean, all of the NFL came out, and we were kind of talking about just the impact, and you know, there's all sorts of people now reacting to what happens next. It feels as if they were well prepared, she was well prepared, and that there won't be any major changes, at least not for some time. And then, you know, Dick Geron passed, which was just awful. And you know, it's just, I don't know. There's something about when you have like members of the landscape of the Chicago scene that pass away, it stops you cold a little bit, especially for guys like us who were around him a lot too. It's just tough.
Yeah. I have my story with him was, when I got a chance to, I got a phone call to be able to go up to work up in Buffalo, and he was a big reason for that, because he knew of me and given to give me the opportunity. It didn't work out, but I got a chance to work out, and workouts are hard to come by in the NFL. But I just remember up after the lunch, I got a chance to sit down and talk with him, and he was just asking me just about my goals and what I'm trying to do. And
I just told him, I remember being so honest with him that I told him I'm still so young in the game of football. I don't know what I want to do. Most of the people played since they were, 4 years old. I was, felt like I was just starting after my junior year in high school. So it was just, he was just telling me to stick with it, stay with it, stay positive, and the work that I needed to do. So very, very thankful for him giving me that opportunity up in Buffalo, man. So he will be missed as well.
Jared, I know that you probably couldn't speak that well, but last week when you did communicate with people around the league and you're talking a lot of different people from a lot of different NFL cities or maybe who work for teams, how would you describe what the perception is of what the Bears have done this offseason in landing Ben Johnson and then the direction they're headed now that they're basically starting over?
A lot of positive vibes from people around the league. Everybody just really positive about the movement. I think people that aren't even Bears fans on the outside looking in are just looking at the Ben Johnson hire is like a lot of people said the Bears, they got this right. And I said, I always trying to tell them, yeah, they got it right, but this is also a place that Ben wanted to be. He said it. He wanted to be here. And so this, I think it's the start of something special. I was on with Bernstein and Marshall yesterday and I knew I was going to be on back-to-back days, and not to tell the same story, but this one, to me, is the biggest one. I told you guys, I've been talking to people over the last couple of weeks, of people who know Ben Johnson, who've been around him. And the person that I was looking forward to hopefully getting a chance to talk to was Jared Goff. And lo and behold, it worked out perfectly. He was the Lions nominee for Walter Payton Man of the Year Award and came over, spoke to our family at our service day on Friday. And then he went back and worked with the kids, and I went up to him and I stopped him. I'm like, I'd kill myself if I didn't ask you about yeah. Ben Johnson. He hit the smile on his face. He's like, "What you want to know?" I was like, "Just tell me." He's like, "Man, you guys got a good one. He's unbelievable." And I'm like, "That's what I want to hear." I'm like, "So is everything that I'm hearing about him as a person, as a coach?" He's like, "Yeah, dude. He's no nonsense. No nonsense whatsoever. Like, you think he looks nice and he's smiley, and then next thing you know, man, he'll get after you on the football field, and he's going to expect a lot, and he expected a lot out of me." And he just talked about how he helped him, resurrect his career again, and how they did it together. And so it just gave me a lot of promise of a guy that, I truly respect his game. I just don't care. He's a Detroit Lion. He's in the division. I respect his game on the football field. And for him to say that to me, I get these guys when they're, just in the moment and they're talking to me and give me some more information, stuff that I can't really say, but the stuff that they give me that they say I can tell, man, I'm very thankful because it shows they open up, and he was serious with me. His eyes lit up. He's like, "I love Ben." So that gives me hope. And I just think about what Caleb is going to be able to look forward to and him opening himself up in year two and having to learn some new things, and build on some of the things that he had success on in year one, and what that can mean between the relationship with Caleb and Ben is exciting to me, and that's what I'm looking forward to. I know they got to build a team, but that relationship is the one that I'm going to be focusing on a lot because those two are going to be joined together while their time here in Chicago.
Yeah, I think that's well said because you think about the impact on Goff's career, and they, he was kind of a throw-in. They just wanted Matthew Stafford, and they deemed he wasn't good enough. And then he's good enough that they're considered one of the great teams in the NFL, a team with the potential, had they been healthy, maybe to win a Super Bowl. And I'm sure they'll be a part of it next year. It feels like the Eagles have separated themselves and distanced themselves from everyone the way they finished the season and kind of flew through the playoffs. But that Lions team was awful good. I'll be very curious to see what they look like without Ben Johnson, without Aaron Glenn. They did lose quite a bit, so that'll be fun.
Yeah, I think that's going to be tough. I mean, but you still have you got your man, man in charge, Dan Campbell. So it's his attitude and what he does is kind of carries that team, but it is going to be different for them. But I do believe, Molly, if they were healthy, man, they got a good chance to make a run, man. That offense, when they were healthy, man, those two backs,
that offensive line, they were different. Yeah,
that offensive line, they are different, and I think that's what Ben has to do and is figure this out. And as we look at free agency, that's where you got to start figuring out what's most important. And we know that the offensive line is important. To me, the center position is so key. Having a guy that can really, be that signal caller, that quarterback of your offense offensive line is going to be critical. Then you also got to figure out too, like other positions, where do you spend your money? And I'm glad I'm not Ryan Poles, because that's the difficult part about all this. You also got to find a guard to be able to pair with Darnell Wright too on that right side. So how much money do you spend? You do have six most cap space in the league right now. You got to do it wisely and do it smart. And this is going to be Ryan Poles' opportunity to be able to show how smart he is. Get it and try to get it done and piece this thing together. It's not going to happen overnight, but you got to start setting the foundation and the pieces. To me, a veteran center would be very, very crucial. I would love that, to be able to help out Caleb and take some of the responsibilities away from him.
Jericho, sip some tea.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous, but I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code STYLE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code STYLE. Enjoy!
Ah, can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
This President's Day, upgrade the look of your home without breaking your budget. Save up to 50% site-wide on brand new window treatments now at Blinds.com. Blinds.com, the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, is the better way to give your home the presidential treatment. Blinds.com makes it easy with free virtual consultations on your schedule and samples delivered directly to your door, fast and free. Choose from trending woven wood shades or upgrade to motorized. Blinds.com has everything and more, all with upfront pricing and no hidden fees. Need help with installation? Blinds.com can handle it for you. Or DIY with expert guidance from our design pros. With over 25 million windows covered and our 100% satisfaction guarantee, you can count on Blinds.com to deliver results you'll love. Shop Blinds.com's President's Day Mega Sale right now and save up to 50% site-wide, plus a free professional measure. Up to 50% off site-wide at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
The details behind the Diddy indictment, Taylor Swift's stalkers, Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I will.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Condolences to all the Cub fans out there. Cubs lose the World Series.
Good morning, Molly.
Doesn't it feel that way? Doesn't losing Alex Bregman feel like you just lost the World
Series? No, that's overstating it.
You said yesterday that they could win the World Series. Or, not you, I'm sorry, but we talked about...
But two things are true. Getting Alex Bregman would have made them a legitimate World Series contender. Mm-hmm. But losing him to the Red Sox in the way that they did with the contract he signed doesn't equate to losing a World Series.
Three-year deal for, $120 million, a massive contract, $40 million a year, $10 million more than anyone else was offering.
$40 million a year.
And he still gets the opt-outs after each year.
Congratulations to Scott Boras. Yeah. You know, Bruce pushed back, and Scott Boras got the deal he wanted and saw it and held out for. There are reports in Detroit. They probably feel very disappointed as well, Tigers fans, because the length of that offer was a six-year deal, reportedly.
Mm-hmm.
And Bregman turned that down for a higher average annual value or average annual salary.
A lot higher.
And $10 million more than the next highest bidder.
Come on.
It's understandable to be disappointed in Chicago, to feel like you missed out on something. But knowing that, it's hard to be too unhappy when you see a guy getting paid $40 million a year to play second base.
I nearly bought a house one time, but I was $10 million short in the bid. I had bid $10 million in one. But I can only afford the dollar. It's an absurd amount of money.
It is an absurd amount of money. It would be fun sometimes to debate whether or not the Cubs overpaid for somebody. I would look, if they want to next November overpay for Kyle Tucker, I think it will be fun to debate whether or not they did or not. Now, that would be a different kind of investment. I as we process this beginning this morning and what it means and what they are and aren't without him, I have a hard time just... Common sense says that you're not going to pay Alex Bregman, 30 years old, $40 million a year.
Don't you wonder why you didn't make it $5 million more? Like, I just wonder what is the tipping point for getting a deal done. If you give a guy $10 million more a year, well, you won. If there's a $10 million difference. But what if there was like a $2 million difference? In other words... Did they overbid?
Did the Red Sox overbid?
Well,
perhaps they did, because the only question then would be, why did it take this long?
Right.
Maybe there was negotiating back and forth, and maybe it's all the answers lie in the details with the opt-outs and the flexibility those provide. It's hard to know until you see what's being reported now is that The salary is, think about it, $10 million more than anybody else was offering. That's not a hard decision for Alex Bregman.
That's a lot more.
And now the Red Sox in the offseason got Garrett Crochet. Now they add Alex Bregman.
Yeah.
They have to feel very good about their opening day lineup and their chances for this season. Meanwhile, the Cubs, I tweeted out last night when this happened around 9:45, the Cubs miss out. And I feel like they did miss out, but it's understandable why they would not be in this given what the Red Sox overpaid.
Yeah, it's a huge overpay. I mean, it's a crazy amount of money. Again, why wouldn't $7 million more? Like, you could have saved so much money by not, but it's almost like they just decided, all right, this is going on too long. Let's just put it out of.
We've seen teams and organizations bid against themselves. Yeah, it's not.
That's what I'm asking. Yeah, doesn't it feel like they bid against themselves?
It does feel that way. It's not the same type of acquisition, but we live in a city and we've been talking about Ben Johnson for a month now. The Bears essentially paid him more than anybody else offered.
Mm-hmm.
$13 million. How much would that have been what the other teams that were interested in him would have paid him? We'll never know.
Right.
So when you come up with a number, maybe they didn't want to go higher than $120 million. And they said, okay, and they worked out the terms. There's going to be a lot of reporting on this. A lot of the details will come later. The bottom line is the Cubs have to now go to Plan B. And if Plan B is Matt Shaw, then you have to embrace that possibility and you have to go into the season with high aspirations and four really young, developing players in your lineup every day.
But I mean, I understand what you're saying. I think we always knew that if they got Bregman, that Shaw wouldn't be the starting third baseman. But now they've got to get a backup third baseman, mm-hmm. right? So it's like plan B is Turner or whomever, right? Isn't that more plan B? Not as the starter. Matt Shaw was always there, is all I'm saying.
If that makes sense, that I think the way you listen to Craig Counsell, and he's elaborating quite a bit. I think some people are maybe not as satisfied in hearing him elaborate on certain things, but he's been pretty open, I think. Sounds like he's pretty set with his backup plan at third base. Like, he talked about Birdie, and he talked about...
So they're not going to add anybody else?
I don't know. I think that he's protected himself against that possibility, and he's braced for that reality. If they do, it's a bonus. I still think that Justin Turner is 40 years old. It's right. not ideal, but it does give you some insurance and maybe some security. I also found it very interesting that the story... And the news coming out yesterday, looking forward to talking to Bruce about this, Alex Canario is out of options, and he's been practicing as a backup first baseman. Maybe a right-handed pop or complement or platoon with Michael Bush at first base. I don't know defensively if that's a risk or whatever, but there are options that they have.
That was the one thing he did say that kind of caught everyone's attention, that they needed cover at first base,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is crazy.
A little bit.
But I guess Bellinger's gone, and that had been your cover.
And that was your cover, and it gave you a good feeling. Justin Turner certainly would be a guy
right.
that could back up both positions, or maybe sometimes if Shaw struggles, start at third base. You have realistic expectations if a guy joins your team at 40, but you would feel better about the situation. And I think the Cubs want to put themselves now in a position where they feel better about the situation because it's disappointing.
Well, it's funny because, Dustin, are you disappointed? Because the amount of money helped ease the disappointment. It was kind of like, oh, well. I mean, they got him. They went $10 million more than anyone else.
A bit disappointed, but based on the figures, you're right. I mean, it's ridiculous. Well, $40 million a year for a 30-year-old. Here's the next time Jed talks, and it could be here on the Score. Who knows? Are the Cubs not in the business of deferred money? It just doesn't yeah. seem so. It seems like to get these big deals done,
right.
teams are deferring
That's
money.
That's an excellent question.
And it doesn't, you know, is that just something from Tom? Like, we don't do that. We're not involved in that.
To
game.
Your knowledge, and I know this is a big question to ask it at 5:39, but has he addressed or Ricketts ever addressed that question? I don't recall asking it. And I'm trying to
You're
remember.
The last one who had access to him, right?
I'm sorry. Yeah, that's why I'm
not blaming
this
you for
loud,
not asking him either.
But we did talk to Tom Ricketts at the convention, and I think that there were questions alluding to that, but I'm not quite sure. I'd have to go back and check. It's a great question because if the Red Sox got that done yes. in part because of the deferral, look, Mully, but you're right. There's an understanding of what happened and why the Cubs maybe were fiscally responsible and not giving this guy $40 million a year. But I think by the same token, an honest reaction is disappointment.
Yeah,
I think you can be disappointing and understand.
I think it's been such a long kind of daily update process. I mean, I feel like we've had daily updates, which are basically speculation, for roughly 3 or 4 weeks now. Where every day it feels like, oh, the Cubs, they've inched ahead. Oh, the race is, you know.
It felt that way.
Yes.
Well, because a lot of people were speculating. And let's just take yesterday until this broke last night at about 9:45. We had audio from Harold Reynolds, who had a source telling him
That's
Bregman
right.
to the Cubs. Our guy, John Heyman, who does the job as well as anybody, went on a podcast on Wednesday afternoon
right.
and said that the Cubs were the favorite.
Yeah.
And so you build up this sort of expectation, maybe a little bit of excitement, and you think, okay, this could be possible. And then you see it ruined the way that I watched the rest of the Four Nations face off.
Well, I got to tell you, I think that what's interesting to me is yesterday was the first time I heard A.J. Hinch talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about the special relationship that the two of them have and how close they are. And I was thinking, like, oh, wait a minute, like, I was thinking of it as a pure money decision, and the Cubs, when it came down to everyone making the same offer, were the more desirable destination.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's your workout buddy or a couple guys you played with, you were like, oh, look, they got connections. Yeah, he would want to come here. But his old manager is in Detroit, and his old backup manager is in Boston. Like, you didn't think about it in terms of because I thought about it only as a monetary issue.
Right.
But I feel like it came down to just money.
I think it did come down to money. And if you were, I feel like this is not rationalization. Maybe you disagree. But if you're in Detroit and a Tigers fan, you're more disappointed, I think, than a Cub fan.
I bet you're hugely
because
disappointed.
Because you had a six-year offer, apparently, reportedly, on the table. You had the ex-manager there, and you had a need that exists, and he said no anyway.
Yeah.
To go to the Red Sox, it just made them a better team.
Yeah, I never thought about it in the sense of who needs it more, who needs it most. Mm-hmm. I thought about it in the sense of who's giving the most.
I just
who's
feel like
offer him the best deal.
But you were not alone in that. I think a lot of people felt the same way and were overlooking some of these connections that make a lot of sense now, but in retrospect, maybe we overlooked because you're like, well, he's not going to pick the Boston Red Sox because he's got a connection with that manager. But I think all of it came together. Well, here's what's really interesting too. At this stage of his career, I know he was a shortstop in college, but he's going to play second base, apparently. Mm-hmm. So he's going to move from third base to second base because the Red Sox are set there. So I think there's all kinds of questions you wonder about that move, and you're paying $40 million. We talk about premium positions in the NFL more so than we do in Major League Baseball, but $40 million for a second baseman.
Yeah, but I mean, by doing that, don't they have a better lineup? I mean, they're getting a hot corner offensive production at second base.
Yeah, I agree.
I just think that, I guess what I kind of underestimated is that the Yankees are damaged, right? The Yankees might be taking a step back, even though they're acting like that's not the case, and they've obviously got pitching and improved.
You lose Soto, you take a step back.
You're taking a step back. So maybe the Red Sox think, hey, we can take this step forward and win the division, right?
Mm-hmm. I think that's probably all sensible. And we're getting a lot of pushback. Like, why do you worry about the Cubs' money? And they're going to be fiscally responsible and win 85 games. It's not all that. I mean, we can still be critical of the Cubs for not doing enough, and we can always be critical of ownership, and we're going to still be skeptical about a lot of things. It's just that at first blush, when it hits you, you understand. Anybody, I think, applies common sense to this. You understand why a team that didn't offer $10 million more, this is an overpay. This is clearly an overpay.
It's $10 million more. It's $40 million a year. I mean, where does that fit in the landscape of baseball? I understand it's Shohei makes a ton of money and Soto made a ton of money.
It's understandable to be disappointed. It's hard to be mad about this. You know, I didn't come in this morning like I'm just ticked off at Tom Ricketts because he won't spend. I don't feel that. I'm not going to manufacture that.
I'm more surprised at the amount of money
I am too.
He's getting.
I am too.
It's crazy.
That's the dominant reaction. Surprise.
Yeah, it is surprise. Because it was this horse race, and it was like kind of you thought the Cubs had inched ahead, and you know they're coming down the stretch, and here come, and then the guy the horse wins by 40 lengths. Like what? How did that happen? How did that guy woo like get so far ahead of everyone else?
7-7-3.
It's almost like watching the Bulls game yesterday.
Oh no, let's not go there yet. Oh my gosh. 7-7-3. When is David apologizing to Bruce, giving him a hard time on Scott Boris? Boris won again. Boston has to be ticked off at offer $10 million a year. Boris played the three perfectly. Boris won this one. He did. My pushing back at Bruce yesterday was that there are examples in the last couple of years at this time of the year where Boris had some issues, but he did win this one. And in fairness, he deserves credit because he got a deal. They got an infielder $40 million.
A second baseman.
A second baseman. It's crazy. So now you got to recalibrate as a Cub fan, process this disappointment, figure out how you feel about this team without Alex Bregman.
Yeah, I think you still feel pretty good. I still think that they're the best team in the division, that they did more than anyone in the division. Mm-hmm. I mean, could they have gotten better? Yeah, that would have been better.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it's not like, it's not like, imagine if you had a team that signed a guy and you thought, oh, that's not bad, and it was not quite $2 million. And then there's another team that signed a guy for $40 million. Like, are you in the same league?
I know. It's a lot. It's a lot. Now I'm wondering how much to look at this now as, see, the Red Sox, they get Bregman. Nick Pivetta signs with the Padres.
Yep.
Does this mean the Padres are now more likely to deal Dylan Cease because they signed Pivetta to a four-year deal? They signed Michael King.
Yeah.
They're locking up those guys for the next couple of years. Did they look at Cease as maybe he's going to be walking at the end of the year, get something for him now? Could the Cubs be in on that now? Do we shift our focus, or is that just a rebound reaction?
Well, I think you shift your focus because the money that was earmarked, the money that you saved on Bellinger that you were going to put into Bregman is still sitting there.
I know.
And you got a guy that it's not a lot of money. It's you got to give up a prospect or two, but you get a guy even for a year who, if you're on the one and done plan, he's the best pitcher on the staff.
I agree with that. I just don't know how much hope to invest in that because I don't know how realistic it is or isn't right now. It's February 13th, so there's plenty of time to get these deals done. Last year, Dylan Cease didn't get traded by the White Sox until it was after spring training, right? We're well into spring training.
Yeah, we're easing into the Cease time.
Definitely. So the annual Dylan Cease trade conversation. I'm not ready to go there yet, I guess, but because it just, you know, you set yourself up for another disappointment. That's all you got to do. You set yourself up for another disappointment if you think that way.
Well, you've got to learn to love again.
I know. I know.
Well, you can't live with protecting your wounded heart.
I'm good. I'm fine. We'll talk about it. It makes sense to me why the Cubs didn't get Alex Bregman if the Red Sox were willing to pay him what they ended up paying him.
Hey, Bruce, how are you?
Guys, it's starting to be a regular habit. Every morning, same time. This has been great.
We like you, Bruce.
You guys.
We like it. You've got tons of information. What do you have today for us? What are the Sox doing with Joey Gallo?
They're buying time. Buying time. That's what they're doing with Joey Gallo. You know, a guy that has tremendous power, can play some corner outfield, strikeouts a ton, hits a ball 450 feet. Actually a good outfielder, good base runner, good ball player. I think he hit 170 last year. Next.
Well, I was genuinely surprised that he's only 31 because, I mean, we've obviously seen him. Feels like he's been around a long time. And I think that is there anything wrong with signing Adam Dunn if you don't pay him, right? So it's not a lot of money. And if the guy is striking out too much, does it matter? And he hasn't even made the team yet, so it's interesting.
You know, there has to be these guys. Even though most of your talent this year on the field, you want them to be guys that have futures. They don't have those position players all in place yet. They have a really good infrastructure as far as pitching goes. And if they have any semblance of health at all, you know, throughout the season, I think you're going to see a lot of improvement there. But position player wise, you know, you still, you know, you have Benintendi, who had a good comeback last year in the second half, even though nobody noticed because of all the losing. You have Robert that you hope regains his skills as an all-star player. And you have Vaughn, who needs to step it up to show that he's a better than the average player. But beyond that, you know, you're just developing, and you hope Montgomery is ready for the big leagues. Position player-wise, they still need a lot of depth.
Bruce, what did you think of Jed Hoyer's concession speech, and why are the Cubs not more active in discussing deferrals?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious. They're still paying deferrals, okay? So they're still paying Jason Hayward. They're still paying John Lester. Is it like $50 million a year? No, but it's about $5 million a year for each. So that in, you know, for an owner looking at that, that's still payroll, you know, for him. He looks at it and goes, you know, we have to pay this money out. So even though it's not on the CBT and they're not looking at it that way, as a baseball president or general manager, the owner does. So that's, I think Tom Ricketts is going to be here today to address the players like he does all the time, every year since he bought the team. If we get a chance to talk to him, I think that's a great question. Why no deferrals? What's your philosophy? Because, that impacted the way they approached Bregman, there's no doubt.
I read somewhere that he's not planning on doing any news conference, that he's got a very tight schedule and he's just coming in to talk to the players and then heading out. So it's my understanding that you won't hear from him. I hope I'm wrong, but I read that somewhere.
No, that's what I heard the other day, but things change, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there was this big attempt by the front office to get this player. They went to Tom and Laura and asked them for the money to go over the budget. They said yes. Maybe he is interested in talking a little bit about the philosophy. So we'll see if he takes 5 minutes out to talk to the media today.
Jed Hoyer said the Cubs likely are done with big moves. What does that mean to the roster? And if they have small moves, what is he talking about or what do they need, Bruce? Because I think that if they go into the season with this group, they're still missing either a pitcher, as we discussed yesterday, or quality depth at third base.
Well, third base, center field, first base. I mean, they don't have a center fielder on the team other than PCA. I talked to Council the other day. He said he's not going to move Ian Happ over to center field for any extended time if PCA is not in the lineup. So there's, Canario is in a year where they can't option him anymore. So if he doesn't make the team, he goes in a trade or something like that toward the end of spring training. So they really need a quality backup center fielder, a quality backup first baseman, and third baseman. They have work to do, and I think some of the money that you talked about, whether or not the Cubs are still going to spend money, some of that money is going to go toward these type of players. As you said, depth. I believe the Cubs left somewhere between 4 and 6 games on the table last year because of a bad bench. And we know how many games they probably lost because of an inept bullpen in May and June of 2024. So I think continuing to fortify this team and letting Matt Shaw have an open run at third base, I think that's what we're looking at right now.
And I think that the bullpen, they've made a ton of moves, made a big effort to improve their bullpen. I don't know how they're going to sort through all these players and who will end up in what part of the bullpen, what their exact roles will be. But it feels like if they trim those blown saves in half, it's going to be an awful good year.
I think you're right. Again, that was, their downfall. They didn't hit and they didn't pitch in May and June. That was it for them last year. So, look, Ben Brown, Jordan Hicks, very important pitchers, young guys that had to go down last year. Brown is a power arm out of the bullpen or steps up to be a starting pitcher. They're both going to get stretched out like starting pitchers in spring training here and be ready to go. So that having that kind of depth along with some of the veterans that they brought in, the Colin Rays and people like that, I applaud them on paper for what they did in the offseason, yeah. But they're not done.
I'm not applauding the paper, Bruce. I'm a little bit skittish about the faith being placed in the starting pitching depth before those young starting pitchers have proven anything. And I think that when you look at this Cubs season, you want to be optimistic. Can they win the division? Yes. I still think that as much as we talk about what they didn't get in Bregman, I do still wonder if they're a starting pitcher short of being the kind of team, complete team you want to be.
Well, I think that's a very lucid thought on your part. That's something that the front office and Council and the coaches all talked about all year long, the fact that they're not counting on the ERA for the starting pitchers being what it was last year. They're not counting on Wrigley Field playing as big as it did and helping the pitchers last year. And I've said all along from last year on, this year, you need one power arm in the starting rotation. I really believe that. A good pitcher, but somebody that throws something more than 92 miles an hour. And that's pretty much their staff. They're good pitchers, but they're not dominant pitchers. You know, Imanaga was dominant last year, except for, I'd say, four starts where he gave up, you know, 10-run games. I think he was one of the most dominant pitchers in the National League. But second year, dominate Wrigley Field, wind blowing out a little bit more. You know, I think he's still going to be good, but I don't necessarily think the numbers are going to be the same.
I want to go back to that. They are not counting on Wrigley playing as poorly as it did to aid the pitchers. So
yeah.
Does that mean that there isn't certainty? Have they done anything to ensure that they get more hitting out of Wrigley? I mean, it seemed like it was always a hitter-friendly park, and then I don't know what it was. If there was some billboards put up, some signage, I don't know what it might be. But it did feel like it changed dramatically last year.
It did.
And we heard that complaint from a lot of different players, and the numbers supported it. Have they changed anything to make it more friendly for hitters?
Yeah, they got Kyle Tucker.
Okay.
That was number one. But I don't think you can change the ballpark or predict the weather. It was just the second worst home run year in the history of Wrigley Field. The Cubs hit the fewest home runs along with their opponents at Wrigley Field in history. So with those things in mind, is it just one of those oddity years, or, you know, is it something that, you know, you're looking at permanently because of El Nino, changing weather, things like that? I would just say that I think Wrigley Field's a vastly overrated field when people say it's a home run haven. It is probably 15, 20 times a year, but the rest of the time, you know, it's a big ballpark. It has the longest foul lines in baseball, 353, 355. It's a triples park. It's more a triples park than a home run park. So from all that, you know, they are trying to fortify that pitching because they're not counting on the pitchers getting as big of an advantage as they got last year.
Bruce, big picture. So you mentioned Kyle Tucker. In any way, and we addressed this a little bit earlier, or alluded to it, the possibility, in any way, is the decision or the failure to get Alex Bregman related to possibly a pursuit of Kyle Tucker? Are they in any better position, maybe that's a better way to put it, to pursue Kyle Tucker at the end of the season because they were unable to land Alex Bregman?
Well, let's see how Tucker hits at Wrigley Field. I know people will say, well how is that going to be a predictor? It is. It was when it came to Bregman. Bregman has an OPS of 1270 at Fenway, by far the highest OPS he has anywhere in baseball. That factored in to where he wanted to play and continue his career on a track maybe toward the Hall of Fame and helping a team win. So when you look at that, and you look at this season here, and you see how Tucker fares at Wrigley, see how he fares as a teammate with everybody else, and how he likes the experience. It's going to start with a 4, okay? Every year, it's going to be 40-plus for Tucker if he has his usual 30 home run, 30 stolen base season with the Cubs. And, you know, automatically you're down to what? 5 or 6 teams. That's about it.
Yeah, I got a feeling the $10 million extra dollars had more to do with where he signed than whether or not he has good numbers in the ballpark, right? I mean,
well, he didn't take all the money on the table, Mike.
Why? What do you mean?
There was a $171 million offer from Houston.
Yeah, but
not from Houston, from
Detroit.
Detroit.
Yeah.
But if you look at the breakdown of the contract, he got $40 million a year for 3 years, kind of guaranteed, as opposed to, you know, what was it for 7 years? You know what I mean? Like, I think he did better than he would have done with taking.
Yeah,
a
I mean, well, that's
contract.
Projecting. But you're projecting him being a better player, as good a player, 3 years from now. And continuing
well,
to get
next
that
year,
kind of money.
I mean, if he can get $40 million a year on a longer term contract next year.
Yeah,
right.
Let's just say he's going to be okay. He already made $100 million
right
before this season.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, not too worried about it, but I do think the Cubs did all they could within reason. I don't think anybody believed, you know, $40 million was an appropriate number for Bregman at all.
Great stuff, Bruce. Thank you.
Thanks, Bruce.
Guys, have a great weekend.
You too.
That is our guy, Bruce Levine.
Very interesting stuff from our guy, John Heyman. Looking forward to talking to him next week because he tweets out. According to John Heyman, this is Alex Bregman liked the Cubs, but Cubs ownership barely competed, offering $115 million over four and no first-year opt-out in the New York Post.
Wow.
Very interesting perception of what we just discussed and are talking about.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Just 33 days until the Cubs open their season in Japan, but our guy Bruce Levine reporting that Craig Counsell has not made a decision on the second starting pitcher. Counsell has said Shota Imanaga will start one of the games, but not which one, and he said that he'll likely use four starters in the two games, so who starts the opener? Is there a doubt?
No, there's no doubt. There's no controversy. There's very little suspense here, guys. This is... We don't really have anything to wonder about. It's going to be Justin Steele. We know this. The Cubs play two games in Japan. Then they come home, right? There's a break. So these two games are self-contained games. They're like a series. You're going to use everybody. I don't know why there's so much consternation based on Dustin's reaction before the show. I'm gauging this on. You're going to see Justin Steele, probably game two. Imanaga, probably the opening day starter. He's in Japan. We get it. Jameson Taillon's going to pitch. Craig Counsell's already said he's going to use all the starters in different roles, right? Yes, sir. So Taillon's going to pitch. We might see Boy. Who else do you want to see? There's no really – Justin Steele and Imanaga are going to pitch in Japan.
So why can't Craig just say that, David?
I don't know.
Why can't he said that, of course, Shota will pitch because it's, quote-unquote, mandated.
Kidding, though. Okay. It's not mandated by the Japanese government or anything or by the Cubs, MLB's. He's being tongue-in-cheek.
Oh, he's hilarious.
Well, but why is this such a thing? First of all, you know how I feel about opening day starters.
He's asked a direct question, and he has to go cloak and dagger.
I agree with you. It is a big deal. It is a ceremonial honor to be the opening day starter, right?
For in this case, if Imanaga is going to start in Japan, yeah, it's a big deal.
So he has to earn it,
especially against Ohtani. Isn't Ohtani
huge.
He's on the bump now, right? He's actually planning on pitching this year.
Justin Steele started the first game for the Cubs last year. All of a sudden, he's not going to. Could he at least just say Shota Imanaga and Justin Steele are going to start the two games?
This is what I care about.
Are they both going to pitch
in Japan? Are they both going to pitch against the Dodgers? And those two games, are going to see all your starting pitchers against the Dodgers? Fine. Yes. Go ahead, Dustin, your turn.
Your turn.
I told you. Why can't he just tell us that Shota's going to start one of the games and Justin Steele's going to start the other? Why is that so secret? State secrets. We're hiding that from the Japanese media. Let's throw him off. We're going to start Ben Brown in game two, and then in the third inning, we're going to come from behind tactically, and we're going to bring in Justin Steele. That'll screw up the Dodgers lineup. We got him on the ropes. They're supposed to be the champs.
Could it be as simple as they haven't thrown a pitch yet this season? They haven't really gotten into any spring training activity, and he just doesn't want to name his starting rotation yet. He knows that they're going to definitely be starting two different pitchers because they got to play two games in Japan, but he doesn't know who it is, although Shota will definitely be one of them. I think your reaction to it, who knows? You don't know who's in what kind of condition. I would imagine that Justin Steele would be the starter in one game because he was the opening day starter a year ago, and it is a largely ceremonial type of thing, but people love it. People love that kind of thing, and you got to kind of bow to ceremony sometimes. And I think that I think it will be really interesting to see if there is any chance that you can. I'm very curious how many pitchers he will use. Not if you're planning on using four starters over two games, how many bullpen guys? I mean, is anyone pitching more than a couple of innings at the beginning of a season if indeed you're worried about preserving arms? Or does this give you a better opportunity to get everybody a little work so you're up and running and you're more prepared to get into your rotation as the season goes on? It's a long flight there and a long flight home, and you'll have time and you'll be able to really kind of set up your pitching any way you want. So I'll be very curious to see how he uses them. But I do think it is ceremonial, and that's it. And that's why you want to know, Dustin. But he doesn't want to tell you. All right, that is the Extra Point. And we got your phone calls. We got the phone lines open, 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
I just think his upside is tremendous. And I know a lot of people talking about, well, let's lose and get the draft pick so we can get in the Cooper Flag sweepstakes. Guess what, guys? You already got Cooper Flag.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Boy, I got to get up. I got to get up and get to work. This is the song that is on my alarm. Thank you for that.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Isn't that weird? Seriously, I hear it on the radio, and I'm like, oh, got to go.
Didn't know what you're referring to.
No, I was.
That's good to know. You're here.
I mentioned that.
Relax. Wide awake.
I feel like I may have already arrived. But who's going to arrive? That's what we've been talking about. Who are the, you know, Dustin's right. That is a good question to go through once again. Who is the biggest star in Chicago? Who's going to be the biggest star in Chicago?
Those are two different things.
But, those are interesting things. Because I don't see anyone getting better than Connor Bedard. But apparently Connor Bedard's not getting better.
Well, Connor Bedard had a tough start to the season. And he's come on strong. He's got 22 points his last 21 games. So I think the notion that he has regressed is a little bit flawed.
He's not on Team Canada.
I know he's not.
And I don't know if you've watched.
I not only watched, I announced.
Commentated.
Connor Bedard's season has not gone according to plan. He has now drawn some criticism from some pretty big voices in the hockey
universe.
And so you look at that as maybe his star has fallen a little bit, but I think he still has as high of a ceiling as anybody. The problem, though, is that in Chicago, hockey isn't as popular as it used to be, and Connor Bedard's star won't be as bright as some of the other young athletes on other teams, like Modest Bezelis and the Bulls, certainly Caleb Williams and the Bears, the Cubs. The biggest, most accomplished sports star in Chicago has yet to play a game in Chicago in a Cub uniform. That's Kyle Tucker. Kyle Tucker is the biggest star in Chicago sports.
But if we limit it to that question of who's going to be the biggest star in 5 years, where Dustin claimed it would be PCA, and that he's on track. I don't know that he's going to be the biggest star in 5 years. You would think the quarterback might. Kind of
in 5 years, Caleb Williams will be a bigger star than PCA.
If he isn't, then he's not getting a second contract here.
Exactly.
And then the head coach.
All right, so let's do that again then. In 5 years, who will be the biggest star in the respective teams in Chicago sports?
Right.
The Bears, it's going to be Caleb Williams.
Okay. I mean, the best player on that team right now, when we talk about endorsements and stuff, probably Jalen Johnson. But there's not a lot of stuff out there for a corner. There's not a lot of, it's not big star power position.
DJ Moore is also accomplished and out there a little bit.
Yes.
Roma Dunze has the personality to be that guy.
But he hadn't done it yet.
But he's pretty visible, and he was at Super Bowl week for a rookie who did not have the kind of year that he expected to.
No.
So I think Caleb Williams for the Bears. Let's go to the White Sox.
Well,
Colson Montgomerie, to me, is the guy that would stand out. But you had a really good counter to that.
Well, I thought Noah Schultz.
Okay.
But he's not there yet. But when I see him, it's like he's this giant left-hand. I mean, basically, the Sox have the big unit on the way, mm-hmm. right? Isn't that kind of the way that
a young Randy Johnson.
Yes.
Okay. If he's a young Randy Johnson, he will be an all-star. And he will be a big star.
By all accounts,
yeah.
He's got the kind of stuff
okay.
that you need to get there. He's a big, strong dude. That's why I say Randy Johnson, a guy agreed. On the mound who makes you feel small as a human.
Yeah.
You are the better man,
no,
sir.
Just as a hitter.
No.
We don't have to get into the human part. And as for the Hawks, but, we talked about Bedard.
You know, I'm also mentioned this George Wokelaw. These are both two local guys.
George Wokelaw is going to be somebody, if he connects
yes.
at the plate, he is going to connect with the fan base.
So you're
going to
have the big unit and Paul Bunyan playing for the White Sox.
That's
all
exciting.
Goes well.
That's exciting. And with Colson Montgomery at shortstop.
Colson Montgomery, I don't want to diss him.
It's an Indiana thing.
Is that what it is?
It is.
Okay.
It's an Indiana thing.
All right.
He's an Indiana boy.
You got this thing, you. Man.
I don't have a thing. I think you have a thing. I think because he's an Indiana guy, you got him probably higher on the...
I like that, but Colson Montgomery could be from Mobile, Alabama, and I wouldn't care. He's a prospect that has got potential.
Oh,
he could be
I'm aware.
From wherever.
I don't know... That this is his year is all I'm kind of saying.
Not his year, but we're talking about the next five.
Yeah, we were talking to five.
Talking about the arc, okay. The trajectory.
I'm going with the pitcher.
Trajectory. Okay, that's fair. So Bedard with the Blackhawks.
Which is a dumb thing to do because every time they have a good pitcher, the guy blows his arm up. Don't bring that up.
The Bulls, is it Matheus Puzelis easily? I don't know.
I
want it to be. I think that Kendall Gill, I want him to be right. I want Bezelis to be a star, an all-star, and to be the guy that they build around.
Yeah, he's. I'll be curious how he does this weekend and if we feel differently about him come Monday. But he seems a ways away. And I mean, again, he's 20 years old.
Not as complete as you would like him to be yet, shooting the ball, although his shooting has been better than some people anticipated. His defense... has to improve, and he's got to be better at the pick and roll, as Casey Johnson just pointed out. But he's got the personality, he's got the confidence.
He's definitely got some confidence.
He could be that guy. He could be the guy. I'm surprised that we're saying that about him this season when they drafted him.
They got rid of the best player, and then I mentioned Coby White, and you said, well, they may trade him in the offseason. So I mean, I'm just saying. Who's he in competition? How many good young players do they have? They got a lot of them.
Well, you know what, though? The Bulls are so confusing that the only thing I know for sure is that Matheus Puzelis is here for the long haul. I don't know much else about this team and its direction. If I'm overreacting, yeah. Tell me.
No, it's possible he's the only guy who's here for the long haul.
Yeah, I think he's got a best chance to reach or attain stardom, especially if he pulls out the Michael Jordan jersey this weekend, puts it on, does a dunk in tribute to MJ, and wins the dunk contest, and returns to Chicago a bigger star. That would be fun.
Yeah.
That would be fun. What? What's that look?
No. I think all of us, I'm talking about Chicago sports fans, there's a lot of hopes and dreams.
Of course there are.
Wrapped up in
this
stuff.
What else we got, Mully? Reality sucks.
Yeah.
It just, right now, it's not great. It's not a great time. All right, let's go to the Cubs. I disagree with Dustin on this one. I think that in 5 years, Kyle Tucker will be a memory.
Yeah, he'll be long gone.
Unfortunately.
I know.
Remember that year Kyle Tucker?
Remember that guy?
Remember when he made him better and he competed for a triple crown and then they let him walk?
Remember when that guy from the Dodgers was here?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Well played. In 5 years, I think Matt Shaw is going to be better than PCA.
See, that is the question I wanted to ask Dustin, because I wonder about that. Given the fact that he did so well with Team USA and the stories that were coming out about him, et cetera.
He's the one.
Yeah.
He's the one
yeah.
that of all these prospects, this pool of talent that we've been waiting for as Cub fans, when they mature, develop, and achieve, Matt Shaw is going to be the brightest star.
What about Owen Casey?
Matt Shaw.
I mean, does that deserve, Mully, if you turn your head to the left, is that a breaking news on the score that David disagrees with my take, brought to you by, I believe, Wildfire Restaurants?
First of all, love Wildfire.
It's not just because it's your take.
It's like my favorite place.
Just curious, what about free agent to be Mitch Marner? Why couldn't he be the biggest star?
Mitch Marner will be in the conversation.
Oh, okay.
If Mitch Marner comes to the Blackhawks in the summer of 2025,
already...
he will be in the conversation for being the biggest star. He will rival Bedard.
Well, no, if you brought him here then he's obviously bigger than Bedard because he's on Team Canada scoring goals. And Bedard didn't make the cut.
That's a good debate.
What about when LaMelo Ball comes to the Bulls to play with his
You guys got
brother.
This LaMelo Ball fantasy going. I've got to check his contract. I think he's under contract for
David, again, has a player never been traded when they're
NBA.
Under contract?
Why would the Hornets trade him to the Bulls?
Why did Luka get traded to the Lakers? It's about what you need. The league needs the Bulls to get better quickly.
And what about the Bulls, the way that they're being run, that makes you think that they can pull off a bold trade like that?
Right. No, there's not much.
I mean, no, okay. Come on.
That's fair.
Come on.
They could trade Matas Buzelis.
He's untouchable. He's the first untouchable Bull since Mike.
No, he's not. He's not in that status yet. I just don't see them being that aggressive. I just... don't have a lot of faith that they're going to pull off.
Okay, let me ask you this:
a Ball brother reunion.
That's a good one. I like that idea. That sounds like a party we should just throw.
Mitch Marner has a better chance of being in Chicago than LaMelo Ball.
Okay,
easily. Mitch Marner, all it's going to take is money. Utah. There's a rumor at this tournament in Montreal that Utah is already setting aside money to make a run at Mitch Marner this offseason. So the Blackhawks.
So as much as you found him scoring while exhausted to be.
Marner looks tired. Oh, he looks tired. Oh, he's got the puck. Oh, my gosh. Here he goes. Oh, he scored. Oh, he won. Was that SiriusXM?
That was me. That was your impersonation.
I thought that was SiriusXM.
Of you telling your son what was going on in the game.
I had to.
Was that live or was that Memorex?
Yeah.
That was last night.
You know, if we put some of that like kind of skating noise, crowd kind of stuff behind it, that would be indistinguishable from NHL.
I want into this play-by-play rotation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you have whatever. For some time.
The sports.
Do you want to do play-by-play or do you want to be a color commentator?
What's the sport?
In this case, baseball,
more color commentary. Yeah.
I remember.
Because I was going to say maybe we could get you to do like an inning remotely for, you know, Cubs, Dodgers from Japan. When they bring in all the starting pitchers
idea.
Or the openers
yeah.
or anything
we
else.
Could invite the public to take part.
Justin Steele now replacing Shota Imanaga. Justin Steele looks a little tired from the flight.
For all you young kids out there, go through mom's purse and try to find a 20 and send it to 180 North Stetson.
I did have a lot of fun. I did do a fifth inning and with Zach when we were – when I was filling in at a pre and post game a couple summers ago. That was a lot of fun.
Oh, you did color in that game?
Yeah.
I
didn't know that.
I didn't know that.
You
either.
Did. You guys did. We played it.
Did we? Why doesn't it stand out?
You guys poked some fun because it wasn't great.
Where was Coom? I mean, did he just give up the chair so you could have some fun?
I don't think Coom was there that day.
He went and had ice cream with Pat.
And it was Pat Hughes, I think, that invited me down there and –
wow.
Take a chair. And I sat next. Yeah, it was fun. I remember that vaguely. I remember.
For all you young kids out there.
But baseball.
Here's how gambling works.
Yeah.
Vegas Hall. On your way in, stop by the
parlay last night, though. Speaking of that, I had quite the parlay on the hockey game.
Here we go.
Vegas Hall.
No.
Vegas Hall.
They create some really fun. Parlays for you. I had Canada winning and anytime goal from Crosby, McDavid, and McKinnon. Now, I only put like $10 on it, but it would have paid like $300.
Nice.
And that's the kind of thing you do just for fun.
And it didn't pay.
It didn't pay.
How could you not have future Blackhawk? Future
Mitch
free
Marner?
Agent Mitch Marner scoring the game winner.
Next time they play, I'll be betting.
Are they
Marner.
Back on the ice? Is that Saturday the Canadians are back
yes,
on the
Saturday.
Ice?
Yes, Saturday. Tonight's U.S. Yes. Tonight's U.S.
Are you going to lay the 3:45?
In Boston. So it's, you know, in America. North America.
I am not sure what I'm betting on tonight, but I definitely will be betting on tonight.
Over under 6 pucks?
I take the over.
Bedard with the game winner?
He's not in it.
Oh, damn it.
Stop. With that.
Why do you keep bringing that up? I wish there were more Blackhawks in it. How about Tavo for an anytime goal?
If anyone's going to score for Finland, it might be him.
I thought you were going to say for the Blackhawks, it might be him. Because he's the only Blackhawk in the tournament.
I know. Rub it in.
No, I'm bummed by that. I like to watch the local guys. Mm-hmm. I like to see guys that are on. It makes you feel better about your team when one of your players is standing out on the world
US
stage.
The U.S. team is stacked. A lot of talent. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Are they better or as good as Canada?
I think they're probably better.
Really?
I was told that they're probably deeper.
Wow.
So
Canada is just like another state compared to the U.S. national team.
We're not going there. We're not going there. Let's go back to the Cubs. Matt Shaw over PCA. I think Matt Shaw's got to be that kind of show that kind of potential. Now that the Bregman thing is gone, I'm going to start to look at Matt Shaw the way that other Cub fans have been looking at Matt Shaw, as like now the guy whose time is here.
So it took the signing of Bregman to turn you into a Matt Shaw guy.
I was a Matt Shaw guy. Remember when we interviewed him? He was very good. That was before the convention?
CubsCon.
Cubs, yes. Yeah, okay. He was very, very good. I've liked him all along.
Yep.
I just thought he might need a little bit more seasoning, a little bit more. He's only had 35 games at AAA. But if the future is now, then we've got to embrace that idea.
So as long as he's now going to play, he's better than PCA.
Yes. Well, no, I thought I would have said that anyway. I think I would have said that because
I thought you loved PCA.
I do love PCA. I do. I really do. But I can like both players and project one to be slightly better than the other in 5 years.
Who's your favorite Cub right now?
Well, see, that's when they traded Bellinger. That's Nico Horner. Nico Horner is my favorite Cub.
I could have guessed that.
Yeah.
Kyle Tucker is my favorite Cub. I bet my guy does better than your guy this year. And any amount of money, and I'll give you a parlay.
That's a really bad bet for me. I'm not going to bet against Kyle Tucker. That's the most obvious thing on the Cubs.
If I'm offering you a wager, Kyle Tucker, it's always going to be a bad bet.
Kyle Tucker is going to make a run for MVP with the Cubs this year.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think he will.
He's in a contract year. He's staring at a huge, massive deal in free agency, and he's going to be the guy that maximizes his potential.
Is he going to get closer to $500 million or $1 billion in free agency?
Probably closer to $500 million.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
See, I think he could conceivably get over $500 million and that would make him closer to
Soto money, Shohei money. I don't know.
Not quite that high, but pretty high.
I think he's going to be outside of what the Cubs are comfortable spending on a free agent, so I don't think he'll end up being here for more than a year. I would love to be wrong. I would love to be wrong about that.
About him being too much money or him sticking around?
I hope he's not one and done, but yeah. I think that's more realistic to expect. Right. So I'm bracing for that.
But aren't you counting reality on him playing like he's one and done?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Okay. The Cubs. When you take a deep breath and you get over the disappointment of losing Alex Bregman to the Red Sox, you still can rationalize this by saying the Cubs are good enough to win the division and get to the playoffs.
Would you say Matt Shaw for the All-Star game? Now that you're on the Shaw bandwagon.
By opening day, I probably will be
no
there.
Bregman. By opening day.
By opening day, I probably will be there.
First, let's watch him play, the prospects. I don't know, a spring training game.
I still don't like having four young-ish players developing in the lineup at the same time.
Well, Bush is kind of in his second year as a regular, right?
And he's 35.
PCA is kind of in his third year, but second year as a regular, and he's 35.
PCA is kind of still unproven, though.
Amaya's been here a little bit, right? Is he two or three?
He's got to be the catcher he was in the second half more than he was in the first half. But yeah, this is his third year that you've seen him in a Cub uniform.
Yeah. So.
And then Matt Shaw, his first.
You should be able to break through in your third year, right?
One would hope. But we have seen too many examples of guys that you invest that kind of hope in that have been disappointing. So prospects are just that. They're not proven yet. So until they are, you're a little bit cautious. Hmm. By opening day, you're less cautious. Optimism takes over. That's what baseball is. That's what baseball does.